It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome to Money for Lunch. How do I say this, not sound like a jerk? All I can say is it's nice to be here in sunny Phoenix, Arizona, Scottsdale, Arizona, during winter, right? Now, it's not so much fun to be here during the summer months, but, I had friends, families, listeners. I've gotten a bunch of emails today about how everybody's cold front is coming in, right? And pictures of snow and cars covered in snow. Been there, done that, don't want to do it anymore, so I moved to Arizona. It's, Arizona, it's hot. What can I say? It's hot. It's, but it's good. And what I'm always amazed is, people who are, 70, 80 years old, and they still live in these cold climates. And, once the snow comes in, they're like done. It's like, oh, look, honey, we got 2 feet of snow out there, and they can't do anything. They have to wait for somebody to dig them out, or they got to wait for the big frost, defrost, I should say, the big defrost there. Let's see. All right. So first of all, interestingly enough, as you guys are probably aware, I've been playing a lot of this clip from the Balboa movie. Specifically, it's a Sylvester Stallone clip, and he's talking to his son in the movie. I'm going to play that for a second. But interestingly enough, because I have been playing this a lot, and it's also on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Bert Martinez. I also got inundated with a bunch of messages regarding his death. So Sylvester Stallone is not dead. It is a prank. It looks to me like they took some movie stills and some scammer is using it to drive traffic in some weird way to his website. And anyway, it's kind of blown up. I got a lot of messages for it. Sylvester Stallone is not dead. He is alive and kicking. And, trying to see if I can get a live on-camera interview with him. And we're going to see if that works out. Meanwhile, check out this clip. Let me know what you think.
The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward, how much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. Now, if you know what you're worth, then go out and get what you're worth. But you got to be willing to take the hits and not pointing fingers saying you ain't where you want to be because of him or her or anybody. Cowards do that, and that ain't you. You're better than that.
All right, so you should take this audio and make it your alarm clock, all right? You should listen to this thing 10 times a day. I listen to it right before I work out. I listen to it. I want to say I'm listening to it at least, I don't know if I'm at 10 times a day, probably at least 5 or 6 times a day. I think in this 40 seconds, Stallone, via his character Balboa, sums up everything, right? If you know what you're worth, then go out and get what you're worth. You just got to be willing to take the hits. And you can't be playing the blame game, right? You can't be out there pointing the fingers and saying, hey, I'm not where I want to be because it's, that person's fault or this other person's fault. We know people that had every conceivable break in life, right? Their parents were well connected. They had a lot of support. They had money. Every possible break in life, and they can't manage their way out of a paper bag. And on the other hand, we have people who were given every possible disadvantage. They were the wrong sex. They were the wrong color. They were poor. Their parents left them. Either they were brought up in foster care. And they succeeded beyond, what do you call it, beyond the wildest dreams, because they were willing to take the hits, because they knew what they were worth. And they had this clear vision of what they wanted for their lives, right? For their business. You know, it's, to me, the health of your business coincides with the health of your life, so to speak, right? I mean, look, we're all going to struggle. We're all going to have to overcome stuff. But bottom line is, if you have a business and it's growing, then you can always provide for your family. You can make things happen. If you, you know, if your business is all of a sudden spiraling down, it affects your life. It affects everything. Hey, today, I'm excited. Our guest today is Rick Cesari. Rick, as head of his own direct response marketing and branding agency, Rick shares the amazing success stories behind such brands as The Juiceman, Sonicare, George Foreman Grill, OxyClean, Momentous Golf, Rug Doctor, GoPro Cameras, and many more recognizable brand names that he helped create. So I'm excited to have him on the show. Rick Cesari, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hey, Bert, it's great to be here. And you don't know this, but we have something in common. My dad's name was Albert, and my middle name is Albert. So there you go.
There we go, man. I love it. I love it. All right. So, you know, this is kind of cool. So you've worked with all these major brands. And what's nice about working with some of these brands is I'm sure that you're able to kind of give us some insight. And so I kind of want to start the show off by asking you, Sonicare, George Foreman Grill, OxyClean, GoPro, obviously these are very distinctive brands, but what do they have in common?
Well, that's a great question, and I just want to clarify one thing. When I started working with all of these products, they were either brand new products or startup companies, so I was in from the very beginning and helping them do their marketing. And one of the things that they all had in common, and one of the key ways brands can grow and become recognizable, is generating sales. And so the one thing that they have all in common is that we used a direct response marketing campaign to help create awareness and generate sales for all of these products while they were small, young companies, and help get it out into hands of people where they could use it and help the brand grow.
I like that, and I want to get your thoughts on this, because one of the things that I'm a big believer on, believer in, you know, first of all, I'm a big believer in publicity. I think publicity is great. It's definitely helpful. I think social media can be helpful, but nothing replaces direct sales. Nothing replaces sales, and so I tell this to my clients all the time, that if you go out there and you generate $1 million worth of publicity and no sales, that's almost like, to me, it's not a success, right? Because that means that nobody bought your product. They may be aware of it, but, you know, who cares? On the other hand, if you generate $1 million worth of sales, that means that you created brand name awareness. You created sales that you know, that's going to help you grow your company. And so ultimately, direct sale or creating sales for your company is the focus point, and stuff like social media and these awareness campaigns, these publicity campaigns should be really kind of secondary to growing those sales. Your thoughts on that?
Well, you hit the nail right on the head, Bert. I absolutely agree. And that's why a lot of small companies or startups fail. They're too busy worrying about awareness and not focusing on the sales. And I have a saying, it's better to sell to build the brand than build the brand to sell. And you
yes.
basically are building your brand as you're building the business, as you're creating sales, working with customer feedback, what they like about the product, what they don't like about the product. You're not trying to create the perfect scenario before you get started. It's really the most important thing is generating sales just to pay overhead, but also really to get the product out into people's hands so you can get that feedback from them about what they like and what they don't like and then take the next step.
Absolutely. You know, you brought up something kind of interesting. I have been involved with several startups that have gone very big. And sooner or later, what's interesting is you get to the point that you're so big that you don't get that first-hand response with your customers anymore, because now maybe you have a call center or you have a direct sales marketing team or something like that, and you're further up the food, what do you call it, up the ladder. So you're kind of separated from your customers. And what's interesting is you kind of miss that. Having that immediate feedback, having somebody that you're selling to tell you, oh, Rick, I love this, I don't like this, that kind of feedback later on becomes priceless.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's the absolute best market research there is, because you're talking to people that are using your product. We do something, even as these companies got bigger and some of them have, reached $1 billion in sales, to make a point to go out and interview some of the clients that are using the product or customers that are using the product. And we do these interviews on video, and we'll go out, three or four times a year and go to the database and ask people to come in and talk to us about the product. And we film them on video. So we're accomplishing two things. Mm. We're interviewing them. We're getting feedback, what they like, what they don't like, what we can do better about not just the product, but also the company and how people are treated. But then also now we have some video content to use on our website if that's the way we want to use it. We have great feedback from them that can guide our advertising programs. And we have a series of great testimonials. Those are probably, for me, I always say, give me enough really great, authentic testimonials and I can pretty much sell anything.
Yes. I like that. I think that's a, smart way to think about your testimonials or your endorsements, because they do help you sell. And again, not only do they help you sell, but they're also good publicity. It's everything in one. All right, so real quick, why don't you tell us, Rick, about your company? Your company is D2C, if I'm correct, D2C, and tell us a little bit about your company.
Sure. So my company, I'm based in Seattle. So I heard you earlier in the program talking about being down in sunny Phoenix, and this is the time of year where you really want to be down there in the sunshine. Although it isn't raining today, but up north here, the days are short and they're usually cloudy. So I do miss being in the sunshine. But anyway, we're located in Seattle, Washington. The name of the company is Cesari Ignite. It's my last name, C-E-S-A-R-I, and then Ignite. And you can go to cesariignite.com. And one of the things for your listeners, Bird, if they go there, there's a place where they can leave their email address and name, and I'll send them my 5 keys to building a great brand, which is just a nice little e-book about what it takes to build your brand.
Excellent. And it's called Cesari Ignite.
Ignite.
Yep. All right. Well, excellent. Yeah. It's amazing. This idea of 5 things to help you grow your brand. I think that sometimes we like to overcomplicate it. It's not that complicated. It's just, you got to follow a blueprint, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's really basic stuff. And I'll just take one that everybody learns in their, you know, beginning marketing class, the USP or unique selling proposition. And most people don't take the time to figure out what makes my product different than any other products out there, and different in a way that it will appeal to the consumer. And I'll just give you a quick example. When we were working with Sonicare Toothbrush, they were having a trouble getting it onto retail shelves because when it first came out, it was a $150 toothbrush. And people, why would somebody go into the store and see this product in a box and buy it if they didn't know what it did? And the unique selling proposition for Sonicare was that it cleans beyond the bristles. So at the time, there's a lot of education out there about gum disease, about bacteria hiding in the nooks and crannies. And this is a product that can clean beyond the bristles, can go in the nooks and crannies. And therefore, with a strong USP like that, once we were able to deliver that through advertising messaging, the sales took off.
Interesting. I like that. Yeah, I want to get your thoughts on this. A lot of people, and I'm sure in your industry and in your experience, you probably have heard this as many times as I've heard it, and that is, well, you know, because our product is so good and it's so versatile, it really appeals to everybody, right? The Sonicare toothbrush appeals to everybody because everybody wants healthy gums and bright smiles. Is that like the worst USP? I mean, when you think that it appeals to everybody, it's kind of a weird thing because in one sense that, you know, in one sense that thinking makes sense, right? Pizza appeals to everybody, but the reality is you can't sell that. So thinking that it appeals to everybody sometimes really messes a lot of companies up. Your thoughts?
I agree 100%. There's a saying, if you try to appeal to everybody, you'll appeal to nobody. And one of the, there's a great book out there, it's called Fascinate. And there's a quote from the author, Sally Hogshead. It says, different is better than better. So you have products out there competing, like this laundry soap is better than this laundry soap. People get tired of hearing that. They want to know why it's different. What can it right. do for them that's different than everything else they're using? And when you try to appeal to everybody, you're really, that becomes a positioning question. You're not carving out a niche or a category where your product can succeed because you're trying to appeal to everybody as opposed to appealing to a strong following that your product could appeal to or differentiate from other products on the market.
Yeah, I love the way you sum that up because to me, there's nothing better, nothing worse than saying we're better. You know, because yeah. that's not, that is so vague. It doesn't mean anything. We deliver pizza in 30 minutes or it's free. That's better. That is mm-hmm. a great USP. Of course, that's Domino's. They've moved away from that many years ago. But when they first came out, everybody knew that you order from Domino's because it's 30 minutes or free, and you were hoping that they would get there in 31 minutes or something, right? And yeah. it was a fantastic idea. It blew
exactly.
up that company.
They were different. They were doing something different than every other pizza company out there. And in their early years, that's what set them apart.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about this. People are right now listening to us and they might be asking, okay, Rick, all this sounds great. So what's the first step to building, you know, a big brand, a successful selling brand? What would you say is the first step?
Well, I'd say it's a combination of two things we've been talking about so far in today. And that is figuring out what your unique selling proposition is, and then being able to advertise or communicate. And when I say advertise, I mean more direct response marketing, being able to get that USP out to consumers so they understand. And I have a rule whenever I use, and you know, marketing has changed so much over the years because there's so many different distribution channels, you know, Amazon and online and e-commerce and, you know, just whatever. But every time I try to market a product, I'm always trying to get $2 in sales for every dollar in advertising I spend. Sometimes I do better than that. Sometimes I do worse. And it doesn't really matter initially what channel you choose, if you want to do Facebook marketing, if you want to be on Amazon, whatever. But start building your niche where your advertising is paying for itself, and that gives you the ability to take a small business and make it really big. So combining what's unique about your product and then getting it out there in a way where your advertising is paying for itself.
Yeah, I like that. And I want to touch on this because you mentioned direct response marketing or direct response advertising. And first of all, ladies and gentlemen, I want to say this. The fastest way I know to create wealth in America is by advertising, just like Rick explained. You put a dollar worth of advertising in and you pull out $2. If you do that and you do it fast enough, you will create a big brand. To me, I love being able to take a concept and you invest a few dollars and that concept starts to pay you, what do you call it, residual income, if you will, because you are converting strangers into customers. And that to me is the fastest, most consistent way to build wealth in America. Yes, there you can do it in the stock market, and yes, you can do it with real estate. But for entrepreneurs, I think you're measured by your sales. And it's great that your company is doing all this wonderful stuff. And yes, it's better. It's great that you're better than your competition. But if you can't create the marketing that converts, then it means zero. So to me, the fastest way to create wealth in America is through advertising. And I want to come back to this thing you call direct response advertising or direct response marketing. I know what it is. I believe it's the only type of marketing anybody should ever do. But Rick, why don't you explain to our audience, for those who maybe are not familiar with the term or maybe are confused what the term might mean, why don't you explain to everybody what direct response marketing or advertising is all about?
Sure. That's a great question, and actually a big question. I could probably talk for an hour on it, but I'll try to give a very condensed view. Really, when you're doing your advertising, and you can do this, check into this by, turning on TV and looking at some of the commercials that come on, and they fall into two categories. Brand commercials, which are, we talked about earlier, which are for building awareness. They cost a lot of money. There's no way to respond to the commercial. So you see the product, they get you excited about it, you might like it, and they don't give you a way to respond. With direct response advertising, you're giving them a website, an 800 number, a way to respond to the advertisement, and also you're giving them some type of incentive to take an action that you're requesting, download information that you have, go to your website and get a discount on the product. So really the main difference or the thing that makes something direct response is having an offer so that the people can take some type of specific action. And let me just give you a quick example of how powerful this can be. We worked with GoPro when they were just starting out, and we made some TV commercials, and their commercials were really powerful because they use user-generated footage. And at the end of every commercial, we had an offer that said, go to our website, GoPro.com, and someone will win one of everything we make every single day. So people would see the TV commercial, and three things would happen. They would go to the website, and some people would just buy the product, a certain percentage. Other people would leave their name, or almost everybody that went there would leave their name to enter the contest, a name and email address, and we were able to remarket for them. We were building the database. And then the third thing that happened, it drove people to the website, and they had such cool videos on the website that people would share them and they would be able to grow virally. But it all started with that direct response ad where we were asking the people to take a certain action.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. So just to recap, ladies and gentlemen, direct response is just that. You're asking the customer to do something directly. Go here and get, opt in. Go here and sign up for my contest. Another direct response marketing thing that we see quite a bit, you can get 3 cases of Coca-Cola for $10. I see this in just about every city I travel to, versus a brand name awareness campaign, Coke is the real thing. And again, I'm dating myself, but, you know, McDonald has a brand campaign now called, you know, I'm loving it. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't want you to do anything. It's just, you know, they happen to have a couple of $1 billion that they want to throw at marketing. And they're saying, hey, you know, let's come up with some catchy slogan, whatever, whatever. And so to me, nothing replaces direct marketing, direct response marketing. It's better than publicity. It's better than anything because it's trackable. It's measurable. You've invested $50 and you got $100 worth of sales. That's awesome. All right. So we've covered, you know, some of these great names, Sonicare, OxyClean, GoPro, George Foreman Grill, what they had in common. And that was direct response marketing. We've covered, you know, finding a USP what the USP is. And if somebody is maybe struggling with the USP, do you have a tip for them on how they can create a USP? Is that a very difficult thing to do?
I think, you know, that's a hard question because it is depending on the product. But I think that just about every product you can get there, if you're just starting out and you don't have any sales, it's going to be a lot harder. If you do have sales, I, again, go back to that thing where I like to talk to the customers and get their feedback, and you start to see some trends in what they're saying, what they like about a product, what they don't like. And I can usually formulate a USP from there. But let's take a category, and this is a real example, coffee. You know, you have a coffee brand. What's unique or different about that? And there's a famous small coffee shop in Saratoga, New York. The gentleman owned it, and it was going out of business because he couldn't differentiate himself out of it. So he decided he was going to build a brew the strongest or roast the strongest coffee beans in the world, and he named his coffee Death Wish Coffee, the world's strongest coffee. And it basically caught on and became a brand, and it was so successful that he won a contest from Quicken Loans to get a free Super Bowl commercial. And that was really just because, again, going back to creating a product that was different in a category, if you think about it, that would be really difficult to do. And so to answer your question, it's not easy to do, and that's really where you have to put a lot of time and thought and talk to people that are using your product, or if you don't have sales, hand your product out to people and get feedback. And then really just don't, again, I think you hit on the most important thing. Don't try to appeal to everybody. Pick a category that you want to, that you feel that there isn't a huge amount of competition and that you could go in and differentiate your product and dominate that category.
Yes, I like that. And as a tip, and Rick, again, correct me if you disagree, sometimes lightning will strike and you can create a powerful USP in a matter of like one meeting, right? One, you know, brain session, if you will. But in some cases, it takes a while. So maybe, you know, again, I'm just using this as an example. Maybe back in the day, I could really see the guys at Domino's Pizza, maybe their first try at coming up with a powerful USP might have been something like, we deliver hot, fresh pizza to you. And maybe over time, they changed it to, hey, we deliver in 30 minutes or less, or 30 minutes, or it's free. So don't get hung up. You know, if you have maybe a USP that you're not 100% happy about, you start using it, as Rick suggested, talk to your clients, start getting some feedback, and then eventually maybe you change it until you get that aha moment where this USP is like, man, this has everything I want about my brand name. I want, this is the emotion, this is the benefits I'm going to convey. And so if it takes you a week or a month to come up with it, that's what it does. But once you get it, using Rick's example of Death Wish copy, it changes everything because people get it. Your customers go, oh, I understand what it is you do. And therefore, you attract more and life becomes easier.
No, I agree 100%. And that's where people get hung up on trying to come up with the perfect USP. And I think it's more of an evolving process and feedback. The example
yes.
used with Domino's is absolutely correct. And you aren't necessarily sitting around the kitchen table and all of a sudden the light bulb goes off and that's the perfect USP. You know, there's a phrase, you're kind of building the plane as you're flying it. And that's what happens with the USP. And again, it goes back to the foundational things we talked earlier. Create a good product, get it out into people's hands, get their feedback, use their feedback to really hone and sharpen what your USP is until you hit on it. And then when you hit on it, it'll just take off. Another good example, I don't know the backstory on this, but just, you know, I was thinking about it, was 5-Hour Energy. Look at all the energy drinks on the market. And they came up with that USP that set them apart from everything else. And again, I don't think that they were sitting around and said, oh, that's the name of the product. Let's take it out. They probably had an energy drink, were stumbling around and figured out that this was the thing that would resonate most with the consumer. So it's always a process.
Yeah, I love that. Absolutely correct. And for you guys who want to maybe later on connect with Rick, you can go to Cesari Ignite. That's CesariIgnite.com. Cesari Ignite. And I hope, Rick, I'm getting closer to your last name. It's Cesari.
Okay. Unless you're in Italy, then it's Cesari.
gotcha. All right. So, you know, I want to plug this in because it wasn't on my notes, but you wrote a book called Buy Now, and it's creative marketing that gets customers to respond to you and your product. Tell us a little bit about the book.
Well, so that's a book that first came out in 2011. It's available on Amazon. Like you said, the name is Buy Now. And really, it goes into a lot more depth in the marketing behind and the behind-the-scenes stories with the Sonicare toothbrush and the George Foreman grill and OxyClean. I don't know if you're familiar with the pitch guy, Billy Mays. I made Billy Mays'
sure.
very first infomercial with OxyClean, and he's somebody that honed his sales pitch at the state fairs, and we were able to take it and put it on television. There's just really great behind-the-scenes stories. You know, nobody knows. You know, you talk about the process. When the George Foreman grill first came out, it wasn't successful, and we had to make some changes to it that did change it. And that was one, you know, I'll just have just a really quick story because I know we're getting near the end here. The George Foreman grill, when it originally came out, was called the Fajita Express, and it was tilted because the idea was you could cook hamburger meat in it, put your taco shell on the, you know, underneath it, if the grill was on the table, and scrape the meat in there. And, you know, it didn't sell at all. So it was repositioned as the lean, mean, fat-reducing grilling machine. And even then it wasn't successful because when we first started advertising, we had boxing footage in there because George was famous at the time for being the oldest heavyweight person to win the heavyweight championship. He was 46 years old, and I thought it'd be cool to have some boxing footage in there. But our audience was mainly women at the time when this first got started, and they don't, in general, like boxing very much, so they were turned off. As soon as we took the boxing footage out, the product took off. So every story, nobody's an overnight success. There's always stories behind what helps get products there, and so a lot of those stories are in the book, as well as some basic direct response marketing principles, some of which we were talking about today.
Yeah, I think that's a great story. And it goes to show you that, again, ladies and gentlemen, sometimes you got to figure it out. You got to test different things and you get this feedback and you're able to adjust and change according to that feedback. If you are not listening to your audience, you know, maybe the George Foreman grill would have continued to use the boxing footage. And, you know, and if you're not, again, if you're not listening, you start throwing money away. And you know, what a great shortcut. You listen to your customers. Hey, you know, they're telling you in some way that this boxing thing doesn't match your brand or doesn't match your audience. You remove the boxing footage and all of a sudden it takes off. Because George Foreman, if anybody's seen those infomercials with the George Foreman grill, he's a good pitch man. The guy is he makes it fun. He's enthusiastic. He's a good pitch man.
Yeah, and he's a real authentic guy. And you know, just a quick George Foreman story. When he was first on QVC, we noticed, you know, you get instant feedback when you're selling your product on Home Shopping Network or QVC, and it turned out that every time George would take a bite of food, sales would skyrocket. And, you know, people would call in and order the product. I have no idea. I don't know the psychology behind that or the analytics, but we started incorporating that in more of our advertising moving forward. And again, just one other thing that you learned from the consumer feedback.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. All right, let's talk about this real quick, because, again, there's a lot of ways where marketing can get distracting or can become overwhelming. And I want to talk about this thing called omni-channel marketing. Why is omni-channel marketing important? Maybe explain, first of all, what omni-channel marketing is and then why it's important.
Sure. And I would say omni-channel is, on a strategic level, is more of like a step two. If you're starting a small business and you're trying to build your sales, you should be focusing on one channel. But as you grow, I find a lot of businesses get stuck. And I'll give you a perfect example. There's a lot of people doing really, really well selling their product on Amazon, but that's their only distribution channel. And then I've also talked to a lot of those same people. Amazon will change an algorithm. And I've had a client with $3 million in sales disappear overnight because they lost the buy box. And so if you're focused on only one channel, I think that's a great way to get started. But as your business grows, I'm a big believer that you want to take what's worked in that one channel and then try to open up as many other channels as possible. And there's a couple reasons for doing that. There's I'm a big believer in letting the customer buy their product wherever it's most convenient for them, not forcing them to a certain channel. The second is, I've always found that as a company is growing and you've mastered one channel, the same type of advertising will work in multi-channel, and then there becomes a synergy. It's where almost like two plus two becomes six as you get these channels working. And you mentioned one of them before. You know, there's public relations. Well, if you have a nice direct response campaign running and you can layer in public relations, that enhances what's happening. So omni-channel marketing, just to answer your question, is really basically being able to market in different channels at the same time. And I used to use a simple diagram. Just really, it's like a hub and a wheel. And at the center, the hub is your website, where you're doing direct-to-consumer marketing, e-commerce marketing, but it's also your content, where you have those testimonials, where people can come to find out about your product. And then every other thing, PR, Amazon, if you're doing any type of traditional advertising, they all drive people to the website as a place to start learning more about the product or purchasing it.
Yeah, no, I like that. I like that very much. You know, bottom line is you're just throwing, what do you call it, fuel on the fire. So if Amazon is working great for you, then can you find maybe a Shopify store that's going to work for you? Maybe you can start doing some stuff on Facebook, something like that. Because ultimately, if you have 4 or 5 or 10 successful distribution channels, then you just, you know, enhanced your sales, and that's ultimately what we're all about. So, Rick, let me ask you this. You've been doing this marketing, direct mail, direct response marketing for how long now?
probably 30 years. I'm aging myself now, but I started out promoting real estate seminars in the mid-80s using newspaper ads, and now still working with clients using all the other types of marketing, that are available to you.
Gotcha. Yeah, I love it. I love it. And the reason I wanted to bring that up is go ahead.
No, and sorry to interrupt, but, you know, and that's one of the things is when I talk about my five keys to building a brand, that is, these are things where I've been doing this for 30 years. These are things that all of the big successes I've had have had in common. They're very foundational concepts that you can build your marketing off of, regardless of what type of distribution channel you're using.
Yeah, I like that. All right, so let's talk about the five keys real quick. You told us one already, and I want to kind of preface this with you have another book out. Is that right?
Building billion dollar brands.
Thank you. There it is. Building billion dollar brands.
Right.
Yeah. I want to ask you this real quick. So when somebody sees this building billion dollar brands, and you know they're a startup, or maybe they've been in business for 5 years and they're struggling just to get to $500,000 in sales or whatever. Is this book for everybody, or is this for just a few? Who should be reading Building Billion Dollar Brands?
Actually, the title doesn't lead you in that direction, but it's probably more for startup and small businesses than it is for anybody else, because every one of the brands that I talk about in there. Like we mentioned before, we're talking about the Sonicare, the George Foreman Grill, the OxiClean, the GoPros, and what they did in their early stages and then following their marketing and how they got from the $500,000 a year level to a $1 billion a year level. And so it's basically the stories and some of the techniques that these companies use to get to that size. And it's a good follow-up to my initial book, The Buy Now. And that's where, you know, we talked about omni-channel marketing, and I said that's kind of a step two. That's where these companies are doing 500, a million a year in sales. They start getting out into the other channels. So it's maybe the name's a little misleading, but it's absolutely beneficial to people who are starting a business, starting a brand, are already have an existing small business and want to take it to the next level.
Yeah. Well, and I think that one of the things that separates a small business that stays a small business is the mindset. And I think that when, you know, one of the things that separates, let's say, one of these, and you correct me if I'm wrong, because you were obviously there, when you're dealing with a Sonicare or a George Foreman Grill, these guys had gotten to the point where they had, let's say, a team with the right mindset that they were thinking, hey, this thing could really be big. And I think when you deal with a lot of mom and pops, a lot of startups, if you will, they don't have that same mindset. They're almost intimidated by thinking that big. What's your take on that?
Well, I agree with that. And I think, though, also that's a personal decision. And I'm not saying that the goal of every business should be to reach $100 million or $1 billion in sales, because sometimes a business, you know, you go into business to have a good, you know, a good lifestyle, but you will never get to that size, the $1 billion level, unless you have the mindset and are thinking down the road that's where you want to be. And I'll give you a perfect example. Go back to the GoPro. The founder of that company, Nick Woodman, flew up to Seattle, and we sat down to lunch, and we basically mapped out. It was his thinking. He had this small camera that basically was just starting to do well in the marketplace. And we talked about how he wanted to build it. It wasn't my idea, but it was his mindset that he wanted to build this into a $1 billion company. And so we talked about what it would take to do that and how to do that. But it all started with the thinking, which you mentioned, that that's where you want to go to, or where to, or where your bit you want your business to be. And again, it's not for everybody, but if you do want to go there, you're not going to make it happen unless you really can think that that's the goal you want to be and visualize and set that goal.
Yeah. And that's all I was trying to, get to. And you're absolutely right. Somebody, you know, may not want to be, you know, whatever, a $1 billion company. Maybe they want to stay a certain size, you know, for whatever reason, and that's okay. But whether you want to stay, you know, one size or grow to a bigger size, ultimately you have to have the mindset that'll get you there. And that's really was my point, is that no matter what your objective is, the mind, you have to see it in your mind first. You have to have that mind first in order to get it there. And all right, so what are the 5 keys to building a great brand? And this is part of Building a $1 billion Brand, the book, Building $1 billion Brands is the name of the book. And in that book, you talk about these 5 keys.
Sure. And, you know, to be honest with you, we've probably talked to, or covered some of them in our conversation today, but I'll just go quickly over them. The first one is identifying your unique selling proposition or USP. The second one is basically creating the positioning for your product. So you know what your USP, your unique selling proposition is. The positioning is, what's the category you want to carve out? And it goes back to our conversation. You can't appeal to everybody. And so that's the second thing you need to think about. The next one is basically, and this is one we didn't talk about today, but it's something delivering more value. And that's really key, and it's just a really basic concept of under-promising and over-delivering with your product. Give people more than you're promising them. Richard Branson is a big advocate of that. And then the last is that the last one or number four? No, number four, this is one we spent a lot of time talking about today. Always listen to your customers. And again, I go in, I give away this e-book that goes into more detail about how you can accomplish some of these things when they come to the website. And then the last is something we spent some time on today, is using authentic testimonials. And if you put those 5 things in place and you're a small business, you have a great chance of success. And this is, again, it isn't about a specific marketing tactic, but more foundational ideas that you need to be putting in place to make your product successful.
I love it. I love it. All right. So, Rick, we're almost out of time, and we've come to the part of the show where I'm going to throw out some questions I like to say it's the supersize session here, where I'm going to throw out some questions, starting with what – or I should say, why did you decide to become an entrepreneur in the first place? What was it that finally, you know, that you saw that whatever that was, that you said, okay, this is the journey for me?
Yeah, it's interesting, because I talk a little bit about that in both my books. But my grandfather came over as an immigrant from Italy and started a small business, a grocery store. And I worked in that grocery store when I was young. My dad took over the grocery store and also had a restaurant. And so I guess my gene or family were always that, had that entrepreneurial streak in there. But again, like most kids, when I was in high school and college, I didn't really know what I wanted to be. And I was actually, I have a degree in biology. I never got a degree in business or marketing. And when I graduated, I just kicked around and did some different jobs. And I read a lot of books, and I read motivational books, and I read books on how people became millionaires. And at the time, a lot of them were doing it in real estate. So early in my career, I got involved in buying real estate and, you know, fixing up properties and reselling them, like, you know, you see on TV and all those type of things. Then I got an opportunity to work with someone to help market a seminar. And I just, it was one of those things where I had a knack for it. And I think starting in my mid-20s, I never had a job where I worked for anyone else again. I've always had my own business. So I can't really explain how I came to it, except that there were just kind of deep roots in the family, and I just always wanted my independence, and owning your own business was a way to get me there.
Sure. And you know, and it's interesting, we came from Cuba, and you know, very similar. My parents were entrepreneurs, and it just, if you like a lot of us, right? A lot of us become what we see our parents do. So just about every person that I know who's a doctor or a lawyer or a plumber or whatever, their parents kind of did that, and they just follow in those footsteps. So the same thing when it comes to entrepreneurship. I think it's just kind of a normal thing. You see your parents do it, and you really don't know anything better. And kind of like you, I didn't know what I wanted. I looked at my friends who say, hey, I'm going to go to school and I'm going to do this, that, and the other thing. I was like, man, that's, I wish I had that kind of thinking, but I didn't. I didn't know what I wanted to do. All right. Let's talk about this, because I think this is so important. How do you deal with fear or rejection? Because, people look at somebody like you, and you've been doing this for 30 years, you've had all this success, and they probably think that you don't have to deal with this stuff anymore. So how do you deal with rejection or fear?
That's a great question. And, you know, it's probably one of the keys. You know, there's a lot behind business success besides just the things you do, the things we're talking about today. And a lot of it really has to do with how you are as a person, and self-confidence and belief in yourself and self-esteem. And I don't want to go off too far on a tangent, but there was a good quote I read recently that said, people don't have business problems. They have personal problems that reflect in their business. And the opposite of that is people don't have business success. They have personal success that reflects in their business. And, you know, I'll give you a good example. Got asked over my career many times to do public speaking, and I always declined because of the fear factor. And finally, at some point, I just said yes to it, and I started doing it. And it's really boils down to just having the self-confidence in yourself. And then, you know, if you don't have that right now, or you don't have great self-esteem or whatever, there's an old thing in it, and it's like some of these things I'm talking about are very simple principles, but I found over the course of time they work. It's kind of fake it till you make it. You know, I'm working with a person over in London right now that's a hypnotherapist and works with a lot of celebrities, and her saying is that just basically saying to yourself, I am enough, and you know, just this isn't, again, we could do a whole episode on personal confidence to be successful. But really, it's just, a good answer is, just look at what's the worst thing that can happen to you. And if you did do something or you didn't do something, and then take that first step.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. Speaking of, again, this mindset stuff, because it is so important, and I love this idea that we don't have a personal problem or a business problem. We have a personal problem that's reflected in our business. I love that idea, or vice versa of that. What about a personal talk, or I should say a personal self-talk, a mantra, affirmation, or a self-belief that contributes to your success? People call it different things, so I kind of wrap it all into one question. something that you say to yourself on a regular basis that you think has contributed to your success?
Yeah, I just said it. I am enough.
I am enough.
That means
I love it.
I'm enough to for any situation. And the other part of that is that, you know, you're making the choices in your life, and this was something where you were talking before our segment about taking responsibility for your actions. You're the one that's responsible for choices. And so the other thing is, when I'm doing something hard that might not be pleasant, I tell myself, I chose to do this, and, you know, helping get me through that, knowing that I'm the one responsible. I made that decision, and now I have to follow through and go through with it.
I love it. I love it. Ooh, look at that. The cuckoo clock's going out. All right. So we've talked about a couple of your books. One of them, your newest book coming out called Building Billion-Dollar Brands. Another book that you wrote, which is Buy Now? Buy Now.
Buy Now.
And then, of course, so I'm going to kind of, you know, ask you, besides those books that you've written, do you have a book that you recommend and why?
Yeah, it's a motivational book, and I read it early in my career. And I have a lot of books that I recommend when I do talks now. But it's a motivational book, and it's called The Magic of Thinking Big. And the author is Richard Schwartz. And it, you know, the book is very similar to the title, and it really goes into the thought process of thinking big. And it's not a hard book to read. And it's really great. So that's one that I recommend as a starting point for people who want to start a small business to get you in the correct mindset.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I think that is a great book. I have not read it in a long time. I may go pick that book up and read it because it is. I remember it being a great book. It's a very easy book to read. So, great recommendation. Let's see, parting words of advice. If you are talking to your ideal audience, and what is your parting word of advice to them?
I had a mentor once, and he helped me put things in perspective, and it was just a saying he had that things are never as bad as they seem. And also, things are never as good as they seem. So you might be riding on the top of the world, and you know, you think you have it all figured out, and it isn't quite like that. And the same as the opposite, when you're down in the dumps, you know, or things aren't working quite well for you, kind of keep the steady, you know, slow and steady will get you to where you're going.
Yeah, I love that. My brother used to say, it's never so good, it can't get better. It's never so bad, it can't get worse.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Very
last
much,
but not
the same
least.
Thing.
Exactly the same thing, just worded differently. Absolutely. All right. Last thing. How can our listeners find out about you? I think it's I'll just let you say the website, but tell us how our listeners can find out about you.
Yeah, so if they, the easiest way is going to our website, which is cesariignite.com, C-E-S-A-R-I, ignite, I-G-N-I-T-E, cesariignite.com. You can download some of the information that we talked about today. You can also reach out through the website. There's a contact area where you can get in contact with me. And I just want to say, Bert, that I've really enjoyed this interview or talk with you today. You ask great questions, and it's just been fun. So thank you.
You bet. I appreciate your time today. And again, Cesari Ignite. And right there, as you go to the homepage, it talks about building your brand. Build your brand. And then right below that, free download. So you can just click on that free download and just get it. Get your stuff. Get going. Rick, I want to thank you so much for stopping by and helping our customers. Our listeners go from zero to zillions is what I'm going to title the show, How to Grow Your Business from Zero to Zillions. Rick Cesari, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing.
Hey, you're welcome, and have a great day. I really appreciate it.
All righty. Good stuff there from billionaire brand builder Rick Sasari. And man, a lot of good stuff was shared today on marketing, how you can grow your business. I hope you will share this show with everybody you know that wants to grow their business. A lot of great advice, a lot of great information. As always, my friends, thank you so much. And remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.